there was nothing in them that made us excited or even particularly interested. And it was just, okay, yes, this is better written than most, but do we want this in the magazine? Is it going to add anything new to people's perception of science fiction, people's perception of the universe, if you like? And if the answer was no, then so beautifully written we couldn't have said no to it, and given that generally be astounding, it would be rejected. Usually with apologies, but just sorry, no, this didn't surprise us, this didn't interest us. I was always very fond of P.T. Barnum's Admonition to People, which was astonished me. And most of it didn't. What science fiction is, or what fantasy is for that matter, I'm not going to try and define it. One thing it should do, even if it's just pure escape, okay, if it's pure escape, then you should at least feel as though you've escaped. If it's not pure escape, you should at least feel as though you've gone somewhere that you weren't beforehand. You're not just sitting in this chair reading a book. You actually are inside a Dyson sphere, or you are inside a sleeve that you're not familiar with, or you are inside a spacesuit, you've got 2 minutes of air left and you don't know what to do about it. You should be there. You should feel these things. And there should be somewhere you haven't gone before or haven't looked at in the same way. And if you can do that, great. You have just written a science fiction story that is going to make an editor sit up and say, wow. And that, I think, is the first piece of advice I can give you. And now we should talk for the rest of the panel. Sorry.
That's all very true. I think the problem really is, yeah, as a genre, we suffer from this, the fact that the readership and certainly the professional structure of the genre is looking for something fresh. It's in the nature of the genre that it's supposed to provide. That's what it said on the tin. It's supposed to provide something fresh, and that's something a lot of other genres don't suffer from. You know, if you are writing a crime novel, you can write a crime novel about a policeman hunting a serial killer, and there's really no issue with that. And in fact, publishers rather like that kind of thing because it already sells well, so they look at it and go, yeah, well, you know, we've already sold a lot of this, so we've probably sell a lot more. Science fiction has the added disadvantage that when something is the same as what's gone before, it will come in for some critique. Although I sometimes feel like a bit unfair because, you know, as I said, there's no reason why a fresh serial killer novel shouldn't, sell, because it's a genre that sells similarly. There's no reason why another space opera novel shouldn't sell. But yeah, I think what we were talking about there is trying to be aware that you're writing your own thing rather than someone else's. I think that's a problem, because very often if you are just retreading something that I don't think there are many. How many people here actually are writing or want to be writers? Or I figured it would be a reasonable number. Yeah, I think most people who really, really want to be writers, as opposed to just want to have the money that comes from writing.
Not to mention the fame.
Yeah, the money has worked out how much money that isn't.
Yes,
but I think the people who actually want to be writers don't have to be told that, actually, because they're usually writing from something that's a personal passion. But that can be problematic, because the fact that you feel personally passionate doesn't mean that you necessarily have got something that's fresh with you. And the only way to short-circuit it that I could suggest, and you'll hear me say this a few times in the panel, I feel that I am no expert, the only way I can sort of think of to suggest it is to just get deeply personal. Try to approach from a very deeply personal angle. Because if you are potentially a writer, then you're probably reasonably switched on and you probably get stuff going on inside your head that's interesting. And if you do go deeply personal with it, then you should come up with something that is yours, at least, rather than belonging to a sort of a clone of some other stuff that's out there. For me, I mean, most of what I write arises from rage, actually.
good place to start.
Can you tell? But the reason behind that is that I spent a lot of time working in a profession, English language teaching, where you spend an awful amount of your time basically being nice to assholes. And there's nothing more guaranteed to build up a reservoir of rage and resentment. And certainly people asked me where Kovac came from, and I was like, well, I think he leaked out of me as the sort of very darkest urges and longings that I've suppressed, faced with a long line of really fucking irritating students. And when I say irritating, I'm not talking about the ones who, you know, couldn't pronounce the sounds properly or even do their homework. I'm talking about the ones who used to say things like, oh, Hitler, and there's a guy who knew how to handle the Jews. That's actually, I have to be confessed, it's not mine, that belongs to a colleague of mine. We were teaching on the same course, teaching group of Egyptian teachers, God help us, who'd come in for further teacher training on a course from the Ministry of Education in Egypt. And the subject of the Holocaust came up, and that was their response pretty much en masse. That's perhaps the most heinous example I can come up with, but I've seen a lot of that kind of thing. People from cultures all around the world behaving like assholes. And so that rage built up, and it was very much part of me, it was inside me. And so, yeah, it came out in the character. And I think, it doesn't have to be rage. Some other thing, some aspect of the way you live your life, something that you see, the way you look at things, that kind of thing. This is where you'll get your style from. This is where you'll get the thing that defines you as a writer. And I think it's very important to nurture that. And to not try, and in a sense, what I'm going to end up doing here is sort of turning on its head the ostensible title of the panel. Because I think a good writer, it's not about learning how to do the writing, it's about learning something about yourself, I think. And ojo, as they say in Spanish, warning, this may not necessarily get you published particularly fast. I spent 14 years in the wilderness, not being published, and a lot of that will be because I was writing from this very personal perspective, I think. A lot of it was also because I wasn't very good when I started. This is not a recipe for getting published fast. If you want to get published fast, then go into an airport bookshop, look at the things that are flying off the shelves in large quantities, take one of those home, map it out, and then type out something that resembles it. If you can stomach that, if you can bring yourself to do that, well, you probably make a lot of money.
Not necessarily. Damon Knight tells the cautionary tale of a friend who did this back in the 60s when spy novels were selling extremely well. So he went and got 7 of the 10 best-selling spy novels and worked out the rules and wrote a novel according to those rules. And every publisher they sent it to wrote back, I almost like this, but there is something wrong with it, and I'm not sure what it is. And what it was, but there was a lack of conviction. And the reason I remember this is that the only one of these rules that Knight remembers is that the hero's best friend dies in chapter 5. And every time I tell this to James Bond fans, you can see them clicking through this card catalogue in their head. Okay, that's Live and Let Die, that's Scarab, that's Goldfinger, that, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely right.
And you can go by that, and ironically, if you do become successful, moderately successful, as a science fiction writer, you may well be offered that sort of work.
Oh, yes, very much.
But the other thing to remember is that hundreds, if not thousands, and possibly millions of people would have had exactly the same idea. And many of them will have had it before you did. And so the editors will be thoroughly sick of seeing this. This is why
presupposes you would have to have a lot of talent as well.
William Goldman points out in Adventures of the Screen Trade that unless you're very, very marketable, then if you want to write a screenplay, you have to live in Los Angeles. You have to live near Hollywood. Because if you wait until a movie comes out to know what's going to be successful, what the studios are going to want, etc., it's too late. By the time you see the film equivalent of Harry Potter novels, you say, "Ah, right, everybody's going to be doing magic schools." Right, fine. Yes, a million people will have thought of this before you, and most of them will write faster than you do. And and so this isn't going to work. Your first draft, because I'll qualify this slightly, your first draft should always be for yourself and no one else. Then you decide, okay, who else is likely to appreciate this? Who else is likely to enjoy this, or have the bejesus scared out of them by it, or whatever emotional effect you're after? And then you look at, well, okay, not everybody feels the same way I do about confetti, so I'll change that to poisonous snakes. And then you make those changes. But your first draft, write for fun, because once the fun goes away, it's just a job.
I think the other thing is, actually, something else before we get to go. It's well worth thinking about form as well.
Mm-hmm.
Because, to be honest, there is not a lot of money in writing novels. 80% of novel writers never quit their day job.
Mm-hmm.
And even the ones who do it usually take them 5-6 novels probably before they're making the kind of money from royalties that would justify that. So it's not that you shouldn't write novels, but you should be damn sure you want to before you do it. There are other forms. Screenwriting is one. TV writing being a variant on that. Comic book writing as well. Now, without wishing to denigrate screenwriting or comic book writing, they are technically much easier. There's a little bit of technique involved. You have to learn up front how to put together a panel, set of panels, for example. But fundamentally, they're a lot easier to do and a lot faster to do as well. You can put out a comic book script I used to do the Black Widow ones in about a day and a half each. That's a lot easier. I've never written any, even my worst short stories, or pretty bad. Took me much, much longer than that. And there's also more potential in those forms. Unfortunately, we live in a visual age, and the stuff that's tied to the visual arts is very strong. And there's a lot of mileage in it, and a lot of money in it because of that. So you need to be sure that you are a novel writer, not a comic book writer, or not a screenwriter. And to be honest, if your sort of primary input is visual, the thing that really kicks you is visual stuff, it may well be that you suit like one or two of those media, and they're well worth shooting at as well. Especially in, and something else I was going to say about short fiction. People keep asking me for short stories, and mostly I don't give them one, and there's a very simple reason for that. I'm a shit short story writer. I'm really not good at it at all. And there has been a meme around in science fiction for a long time that, you hone your art by writing short fiction, and then when when your sensei says that it's time, when you've done enough of the practicing, then you go off to write a novel. This is just not true anymore. The market's changed so much since the time when you could actually make some kind of a living from selling short stories, at least part-time living. You could shift enough short fiction to the very many outlets that were around back in the 40s, 50s, 60s, maybe even early 70s. Short fiction was a viable way to go, and you could then get on and write some novels later on. These days it's just not the case. There are forums for short fiction, but there aren't that many of them that don't pay that well. Now, this is not to say you shouldn't write short fiction if you're a short story writer, because the short form is a thing of beauty if it's done well. And that's why I don't write short fiction, because it's not done well when it's done by me. But again, be aware that short fiction is a nightmare as far as trying to make a viable career out of it is concerned. I was actually trying to persuade the managing director of the Orion Group at WorldCon a couple of years ago, to publish Kelly Link, who writes superlative short fiction in the fantasy field. And Orion had just picked up Margaret Lanigan, that was doing her collection of Black Juice. And I was saying, yeah, I know you've done this one. You know, the thing about this, Kelly Link, she's great, but they are short stories, and I know that you've got to be careful about short story publication, etc., etc. And he actually said to me, he was a bit drunk, he said, if the list is strong and selling well in general terms, there's no reason why we can't publish one or two books that are commercial suicide.
have you ever told Kelly this?
No, I haven't seen her since then. But this is sadly true.
Yeah.
Publishers don't really like short story collections because they're hard to shift. Someone who's already an established author can shift a set of short stories, maybe, but it is very hard to do. So again, if you know what works for you is the short form. If it's what you're good at, well then hone it and go on a diet or something. Because you're going to start. But if it isn't necessarily, if you actually find it's quite hard to get what you want to say into a short story format, then don't bother. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Look at putting together, if what you think is in you is a novel, then get on with writing that novel. Because these days, there's enough interest out there, there are enough people going through their slush pile looking for the next big thing, you might as well be putting the effort into the novel, if that's where your strengths lie. And I would say that generally speaking, you're either a short fiction writer or a novelist, and I don't think, there is some overlap, there are one or two people who are very good practitioners of both. Mostly it's not the case. Mostly if you're very good at one, you tend not to be very good at the other. Take one of my favourite authors, Bob Shaw, back from the 70s, superlative short story writer, but his novels are all very much have the feel of sort of stretched and extended novellas, or even cobbled together anthologies with a sort of linking theme through them. So again, as a sort of hard tip, work out what it is that you are good at, work out where your strengths lie in the kind of fiction and the form that you're going to apply and so forth, and then go for it. Don't find yourself sidetracked into doing something that actually isn't going to pay off. And I speak from bitter experience because I spent quite a few years writing short stories badly, sending them to magazines, getting them rejected, trying again. And really what I should have been doing all that time was working on a novel, because when I finally did sit down and write a novel, it sold the collection. It takes longer to put a novel together, therefore the point at which you'll be able to start submitting is correspondingly further away. But the payoff, if you do succeed, is correspondingly much, much higher. Think that one through and decide. But don't allow yourself to be sidetracked, and don't allow yourself to be put off, comic book writing, for example. Very little living to be had from comic book writing. Also, comic books suit the short form quite well.
Yeah.
Something that would make, say, a 15 or 20 page prose short story will fit quite nicely into an issue of comic, that will fit quite nicely into a cycle of six comics. It's much tighter to form and shorter ideas and so forth. There is a form for them. So don't game writing is the other thing, of course. There's a lot of potential in game writing.
But not very much money.
Not very much at the moment. But if the game market is very much on the up, so again, if you've worked in other visual media, you'll find there's a crossover there. So don't blind yourself to any of these options. Mm-hmm. Keep them open, keep your eyes and ears open for those possibilities as well, and go for them if you think that they'll take off for you.
Small qualifier to that. Try all of these things. I even tell my students who want to write prose to try writing some structured poetry at some stage, because nothing will teach you how to be concise and how to follow a structure, like writing a sonnet or We're Still a Villanelle. It has no commercial value. When I was at the Festival of Perth, there was a joke going around, the difference between a happy poet and an unhappy poet is about $2.50. But it is worth trying, because unless you try it, you won't know what you're good at, you won't know what you enjoy. And the qualifier to what Richard said about short stories, if you write a novel and it takes you a year and you send it off to publisher and you wait a year to get a reply and so on. That's a reasonably fast publisher. Then in 2 years you might get some feedback, but you probably won't. You won't know whether or not you won't know. You know you were good enough to be published at that time, but that's it. It's a very slow process. With short stories, if you can write 12 stories in a year, you've got 12 times as much chance of getting some helpful feedback, and you will work out where your weaknesses as well as your strengths are more likely to be.
Although, bear in mind that with the novel writing, you don't have to write the whole novel.
True. So it's an easier sell to do.
I said this on another panel, I think, kind of always, like in the fourth clue from the early stages of the book. But I actually ran into a guy at an awards ceremony who was up for an award for his mainstream sort of pop fiction thing. And he told me that he had spent about 6 or 7 years basically writing the first 50 pages of a novel with a synopsis of what he saw of happening afterwards, submitting that to agents and to editors. And if he didn't get anything, if he got no bite from that, he just binned it. Mm-hmm. And he went back and thought of something else and started again with another 50 pages and another synopsis. And eventually, I don't know, 4 or 5 times he tried this or whatever, he got an agent who bit and said, yeah, I like your style, I like what you're doing here. This is not the one, though. Go away and write me something else. He did, he dumped it, and he wrote completely cold, went back, wrote something else, and she placed that book for him, and he got a 3-book deal. So, again, you can be a bit canny about this, mm-hmm. you know. I think, unfortunately, and I came at this from a position of pure passion. You know, that's how I became a writer, and that's why it took me 14 years to get published, I think. I didn't do any of the smart things, and I think, you know, the industry is quite canny, and I think you have to be too. And that can mean maybe being as cold about it as think that's something like that, as being able to produce something, send it off. If it doesn't work, dump it, go for something else. You know, it's an admirable quality. I wish I had it. I don't. That's why, you know, I could not dump tools of carbon and come up with something else. But I think an ability to do that, an ability to step back, an ability to say, well, how much effort's going in here, what's the possible fail, very important.
This assumes also that you're the sort of writer who finds writing a synopsis easier than writing a novel. Because I know many who actually find that writing a synopsis is far, far more difficult. And great story about Cyril Pornblith, when he was first asked to write a novel, because sold a short story, and so I was like, this would make a great first chapter for a novel. Can you get me a synopsis for a novel by Monday? And he said, yeah, I can do that. So it's an entire weekend writing a first draft of the novel so he could turn it into a synopsis. Because he wasn't used to working from a plan. He'd been a short story writer. He'd not written anything longer than a short story. And this was how he approached writing a novel. And that's how I wrote my first novel. I could not write a synopsis until I'd finished it. I knew the beginning, I knew the end, I knew a couple of things that happened in between, but I could not have drawn a map, if you like, which didn't show that, no, I'm sorry, I have no idea what goes here, 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 and here.
Although you can bluff.
I couldn't bluff that well.
No. Well, that comes with practice as well.
Yes, I did do that with my second novel, and I got an advance, and was most of the way through writing it, and I called my editor and said, look, the ending is going to be a bit different than I originally suggested. And he said, don't worry about it. He was actually married to a writer himself, or he is married to a writer himself. And he said, I know how little resemblance there can be between the synopsis you submit at the beginning and the novel I get at the end. I know you're going to write the novel. I know you never miss a deadline. That's fine.
Do you never miss a deadline?
I've never missed the deadline. It was the one quality I had as a student that made me help me pass, basically. And it's one thing you do learn in the games writing industry,
as well.
Definitely,
yeah.
And in screenwriting, which I've tried. But if you want to, one other thing, if you want to be a screenwriter, get the hell out of Perth. You have no future in there. But you can write comics in Perth, and some have done them very successfully. But, yeah, if you can't keep deadlines, don't try screenwriting, and don't try comics, and don't try games.
Comics are very good for deadlines, actually. If you're writing a monthly series, there's a monthly deadline, and by God, you better make that deadline.
Yeah, well, the...
You're already launched it in the air, so, yeah.
Yeah. Now, back when Chris Claremont was writing X-Men, I heard somebody ask an editor, why do our proposals for X-Men episodes never get accepted? I said, because Chris Claremont has not missed a deadline in 12 years. You need to find a comic where the writers keep missing deadlines. And we urgently need a new story. And that's where you get in.
Does anyone have any specific questions on this? Because I we're talking very generally here. And Peter.
It's worth one more. Whether it's bad, I don't know if you've had the problem in this regard for writing and stuff like that, but self-confidence is the obvious one. Absolutely. Like, if you start writing something, or even if you can't start writing something, because you think of content, you've been up that shit. And sort of...
Well, I guess... be arrogant is that's a good starting point. That's what I do well. There's no doubt about it that it's difficult, and especially I think in this genre, which is it's hard to get the general public to take seriously.
Mm-hmm.
If you say to someone, "Oh, I'm writing a novel," and they go, "Oh, what's it about?" You go, "It's about the social upheaval, the change of New Australia," and they go, "Oh, I don't know, that sounds interesting." Whereas say, I'm writing, "Oh, what's it about?" It's about a galactic empire that clashes with an alien city, and they're already backing away.
Yes. especially if it's the Australia Council.
So yeah, it can be hard. It can be hard. But I think I find with the writing, there comes a point, it's not something that sort of kicks in at a certain time and stays there, it splutters, it comes and goes. But there's a bit when you write something out, you look at it and you go, that's absolutely right. You know, it can be a piece of conversation or something that a character does or something like that. Little chunks that you go, I've got that right. I know that's right. And you have to kind of feed yourself on that, I think, like those little moments. But getting started is just getting started. You sit down and write, and just keep writing. Even if you don't like it very much, just keep going. I think it's better to keep going for a bit, and then, when you've got a chance, stop and have a look at it and see how you feel about it. And also the thing we've been discussing, bear in mind that your finished product is not necessarily going to resemble the thing you think you're starting out on, in every form. So don't worry too much if you think, oh, God, this isn't going very well at all. Because it may be that where it's wanting to go is actually more valid than the way that you thought it was going to go. So, but it really is a case of just having to say, I don't care what anyone else thinks. I'm going to do this.
It is.
And, Kennedy O'Toole, I think, is the great example. Kennedy O'Toole wrote Confederacy of Dunces, which is now reckoned to be one of the great comic novels of the 20th century. He wrote it, tried to get it published, couldn't get it published, tried a lot, failed a lot, and topped himself. And then his mother sent the manuscript out, and I think 5 years later or something, sent it to a publisher who finally had a look at it and published it, and it received universal acclaim. And say it's reckoned to be a masterpiece. And he topped himself because he thought it wasn't any good.
You will occasionally see lists of well-known novels that attracted more than 10 rejections. It included Dune, Gone with the Wind before she changed the title, Cash 22. Stephen Donaldson received more than 20-something and did basically start again with publishers. This was easy back in the days when there were more than 20 publishers. It's more difficult now. But to answer your question, this is again the advantage of the short story. You only have to be arrogant for a very short length of time to finish a short story. The amount of arrogance you need to finish something like Lord of the Rings is enormous. And that's one of David Gerald's points. This is why David Gerald, if you accuse him of being big ego, will say, well, thank you. Because you can't finish anything large unless you've got the ego to say, yes, I know what I'm doing.
Even if you don't.
Even if you don't, yeah. Take your hands off my ears. I know what I'm doing, yeah. Next question.
Are you talking earlier about, you said writing to the formula with, say, crime novels is quite easy because you've got a, usually someone's died and you've got to solve a crime. So if you write within that genre, it's quite easy to get that formula. But I personally believe science fiction is a very difficult genre to write in, simply because there is no formula to a typical science fiction book. They can cover the range from space opera to something like Frankenstein or the Asimov robot stories. You've got anything could happen in science fiction. Do you think that warrants a special attention when you're a writer, the fact that the ideas that you're creating often have been done before by other authors rather than being unique?
I think that isn't going to be much of a problem for you once you decide what it is you want to write, because, yeah, you're right, there's a sort of broad, much more sort of variation in what makes a science fiction novel as opposed to a crime novel. But in the end, you're going to end up going down one of those avenues. You're going to find that you'll want to write a rocking cyberpunk sort of adventure, or a cerebral Reagan type examination of a future trend, or something brutally dystopian, or, you know, I mean, there'll be a number of different things. You'll find the thing that attracts you, that's what you'll end up doing. And there will be a plough furrow for it, yes, and you will do absolutely no harm at all to have a look at what's already been done and sort of allow that to influence you. What's going to happen almost certainly is the stuff you like is going to feed into the stuff you want to write. So you look at the stuff you like and think, what did I like about that?
And not just in the genre. There have been some great science fiction novels which are also murder mysteries, or at least follow the same pattern as a detective story, even if it's not a murder, if it's a scientific puzzle. Or one of the greatest science fiction novels, Tiger Tiger by Alfred Bester. It took the entire plot from The Count of Monte Cristo, but it's still a great novel. It's full of ideas that nobody else has had. It has more ideas per chapter than most fantasy series, and in total. And it is just absolutely wonderful. And it comes to a conclusion that cannot and has never been beaten. But, what am I going to do for a plot? Oh, take the Count of Monte Cristo. What do I do to get into this situation? What was that sect in Russia that castrated themselves? The Slotsky, yes, okay, I'll go one step further than that. It's taking the idea one step further. It's taking an old idea someplace that hasn't been before. That's enough. You can't say, well, okay, I've got a completely new idea. If you've got a completely new idea, chances are nobody's going to understand it. You still have to write in something that's sort of vaguely recognisable as English, for example. And actually, it's one of the other things that I do tell science fiction and fantasy writers that, or aspiring writers, if it's anything outside more than about a century past or a century future, you're translating the language. You can't use concepts that didn't exist at the time, but you can use words that people will recognise rather than the words that were used at the time. Because you have to. Because if you try to write in the language of English, the version of English that we've spoken in 100 years, even if you could imagine it, your readers probably couldn't decode it. And
has been done once by psychologists.
Yeah, Clockwork Orange. Yes.
We don't need anyone to do it.
Yeah. Ridley Walker. Yes. But Steph.
Okay. I think very many public voluntaries on the YouTube for the official website. Is that because you just don't bother, or they private
entries,
or do you find blogging distracts from your writing schedule?
So, which websites did you mean?
Whatever your main one is.
Oh, right. My website, yeah.
Yeah. So, as far as I'm concerned, as a member of the public, you don't blog much.
No, actually, it's great because it's a lot easier to do
with writing.
I think there are two problems really with me blogging. One is that I do suffer. This is going to sound like an awful sort of fake humility, but it really isn't. I really honestly do think like that. Very often, I don't have a lot to sort of tell people, as it were. You know, and that especially applies with writing, because my writing is still something I don't understand that well myself. So there's part of that. The other thing is that, I do think that there's an awful lot of unnecessary keyboard rage out there. And I find that, and the thing is, I work really hard at not losing my temper on the internet, but it still does happen sometimes. And so what I find is that the more I venture out there, the more the risk is that I'm going to go and sort of freak out over something. And so I try and leave it alone. I try and keep it just a little. I'm still here. You know, I'm still making the odd comment to let people know what I'm doing, where I'm going to be, but. It doesn't do to think that you have too much wisdom to impart, I think. That's a dangerous habit to get in.
It's not so much a question of wisdom, because I blog a lot, and I think there's a great deal of wisdom in there, but as part of the exercise of writing every day.
Oh, that's right.
You can have advantages and disadvantages.
That's something as a piece of, you know, very blunt advice. Yes, write every day. I don't. and that's for a variety of reasons. Some are related to my personal life. Some have to do with the Xbox 360.
Research.
Yes, exactly. Some of them have to do with I'm a climber and I'm kind of addicted to what I get from that. So I'm bad writer. Badly behaved. Far too much. Yeah. But no. So in all seriousness, I think that one of the things that probably slowed me down and stopped me getting published earlier, and one of the things that still slows me down now, probably is not writing every day. And so I think it's a good habit to get in, and if you can get in it early, then you won't end up like me. If you've got your holding down a day job and trying to write, then, you know, make sure that you put down a couple of hundred words every evening before you go to bed. Or some people, I really think they're actually from another planet. Some people apparently get up before they go to work and write for an hour. I don't know how they do that, but
Joe Haldeman is an example. He gets up at 4 a.m. Walks the dog.
Yeah.
And sits down and writes for 2 hours
on
the assumption that nobody is going to ring him at that time, so he wants to survive, and doesn't check his emails for after he's finished, anything like that. And this gives him the advantage when he goes to Collins that he can start drinking before anybody else does. And that's his way of
more
working.
Charming as well, he's not going to get up at 4 in the morning and writes until sort of 10 or something. I don't know how they do it. I mean, maybe your wife like that as well. But yes, definitely, you should write every day. An interesting commentary on that, what's his name? Rob, who wrote Incompetence? He's one of the guys who wrote Red Dwarf.
Rob Grant.
I went out to dinner with him one night in London with some other writers, and we were talking about this thing of advice, and he says, oh yes, I always give the same advice. He says, as a full-time author, he says, you must do your best, at least try to make sure that every day you get dressed.
So of course there was the approach by Victor Hugo that he would get his servants to steal his clothes so that he couldn't go out and he would have to stay home. I was at WorldCon one time and somebody asked Fred Paul and Rob Silverberg, and they're on a panel,
for advice, and Paul said, write 5 pages a day, and Silverberg simultaneously write 7 pages a day. And they looked at each other, and Paul said, so that's how you do it.
I think the most constructive one I've heard, and I don't think it's not going to work if you're holding down a day job as well, but you can scale it, so it'll work, is Phil Pullman, who apparently sets himself the task of writing 2,000 words a day. So he gets up in the morning, and he's got a shed in the garden where he writes. So he goes out and writes. But the point is, the rule is for him that he'll write, once he's written the 2,000 words, he stops. So, if he writes the 2,000 words a day and gets them, if he writes his 2,000 words by 12 o'clock, then he's free, he's got the afternoon off.
Yep.
But if come 12 o'clock, he still hasn't done them, he's got to spend the rest of the day doing it, you know? And so this basically, you learn some good habits that way, because you start to write faster and better because you want the afternoon off. So that maybe you can scale that as well, say to yourself, right, I'm going to write 250 words every single day, and I don't go to bed until I've written them.
I did that for quite a few years, actually. I wrote 1,000 words a day back when I was a full-time writer. I managed to maintain that for a few years. And, I'd write 1,000, and I would then decide whether I was going to write more, or whether I was going to take the afternoon off, or whether it was 11 o'clock at night and I should actually go to bed by now. And because I found that writers who, or would be writers, say, okay, I'll spend so many hours a day
that's
fatal. Have the 1,000 words, have reasonable first draft but not polished, have something happen in those 1,000 words, and that was the rule I went by. If you do more than that, fantastic.
So what does that mean if you say hours for 1,000 words?
Well, because you don't have to use anything.
Exactly, yeah. You can write the same, you can type or working on a play makes Jack a dull boy, page after page after page, especially if you've got a word processor. And,
you write.
Research is not writing. Research does not produce your 1,000 words a day. This is why.
Yeah, and
the 1,000 words. No. So, that's why I came up with that. That's why the time. I do know writers for whom the time thing does work. And I think it's Haldeman again, whose technique was, if he couldn't think of what to write, he would write the alphabet on the grounds that almost anything could be more interesting and more satisfying than typing the alphabet over and over again. And so it would get him over writer's block because, I thought what I was writing last night was boring. This is worse, so I'm improving. There's a friend of mine who's been at this con, many of you will know him, whose technique when he gets stuck is to take the characters who were in the scene he's writing and make them have sex. And considering he writes for children, this is probably not a good idea. But it keeps him writing. One trick I have found useful that I learned from something Hemingway said was when I do stop work, I stop often in the middle of a sentence, always in the middle of a scene. So that when I get up the next day to start writing, I know what it is I'm going to start off with. I can usually get out the first 100 words that way in, sometimes it may take half an hour. And once I've gotten past that, it actually becomes much, much easier than coming and staring at a blank page. That's the worst way.
Yeah, never finish at the end of a chapter.
Yeah. Extreme example of that is Terry Pratchett, who once found himself 30 words under his quota after finishing a novel. And so, I'll write 30 words for the next novel. And started on Weird Sisters. And said, what should I do? Where shall we three meet again? Write on the next Thursday. Oh, this is fun! Okay, going.
After that, stopping halfway through a thing, do you
ever
find it difficult to get to sleep because you want to get the next bit of few words out?
Yes, sometimes. Not often. What I usually do is I stop when I'm not sure of the perfect word for the next couple of lines or something like that. Right, okay, I'll mull this over. But, or I'll go, also when I get stuck in that, I go for a walk.
and it's another great way of getting the brain into another space.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever lost sleep over it. I think occasionally when I've written the wrong thing, that has occasionally, when I've written something and go to bed and spend a lot of time sort of tossing and turning, and it's because basically it's a scene, it's not what I want, where I want that scene to go, and what will usually happen with those is that I get up the next morning and just delete.
Yes. Rewrite major.
Process,
yeah.
But you have to go through it sometimes.
Yes.
Well, it probably is a very good idea, which I also don't do. My writing is very much like, sort of, almost like shellacking, because it kind of, I'll sort of come back, wash over. And I do tend to end up, when I'm towards the end of a novel, I'll have an incredibly highly polished first 7 or 8 chapters, a pretty good sort of 8 to 16 chapters, and then after that to get a bit ropey. It probably is far better to just plunge on and get it done at a first draft level, and then go back and do all your polishing in one go. I'm incapable of it. I literally am incapable. I there comes a point when I'm just, I'm happy with that, I'll go back to change that. And again, I wouldn't advise anyone to write like me, because 14 years to get published and then the sheer out of the sky luck of a film deal, that's no way to build a career. Probably don't go back if you can persuade yourself not to.
I try not to go back too far. I will usually go back to previous days, and I'll occasionally restructure. I'll go back and add another scene earlier on that will explain something that's going to happen later. I need a red herring back here, or I need to introduce a character earlier, something like that. But when I was writing my second novel, and I started writing that while I still had a full-time job, so I was only writing on the weekends, it was getting shorter nearly every week rather than longer, because I'd have to reread it to get back into the world I created and the characters I created. And every time I did this, I would cut more out than I actually added. So, no, I would never try and write a novel in my spare time like that. Again, I'll write a novel when I'm half-time employed, but not full-time employed. But, my wife knows someone whose technique is to set the print in their word processor to white, so that they can't see what they've written once they've written it, until they're finished, and then they do select all, they turn the print to black, they go back and they change it. And so they do a complete first draft without any polishing whatsoever, and then they go back and polish. It depends what works for you, which is going to be different from case to case. And word processors have changed the way writers work. Fred Pohl, for example, uses the word processor, but he still writes the way he did when he had a typewriter, in that he'll write his first draft, make occasional correction and polish, but not very much. Then he'll print it out, then he'll delete the file, and he'll type it in again. So he knows he doesn't make any mistakes. He doesn't put in anything unnecessary. He ends up with a more polished product. Spider Robinson, by contrast, who is by his own profession one of the laziest writers in the business, said he used to do that for every word processor, but now he doesn't. He goes back and just polishes. And as a result, his novels are a third longer than they used to be for the same amount of story. Because he was lazy, he would write things, when he did the second draft, he would write things in the shortest, most concise way possible, because it was quicker, it was easier on his fingers, and get back and have a smoke earlier. And didn't do this with word processor, write novels for longer. Thank you.
Do you use any particular software for writing, particularly for writing, like YWriter, or do you just open a Word document or other stuff?
Word. Yep, saves RTF.
And you turn off the grammar and spelling correction stuff?
I keep the spelling checker, I turn off the grammar.
Yeah, I turn off the grammar, definitely. The computer and I disagree on what good
graphics.
Yeah, likewise. Computers don't know how to write dialogue.
Yes.
Yep.
You say write every day. Obviously, the best piece of work you want to do your big project is a novel, but if you are particularly stuck on that, do you think it's better or worse to write something else instead just to keep yourself going?
Something that you're being paid for, or.
Anything else, blog or write another short story?
I think. Well, again, it's this thing of, you know, it depends on the person, but my sense of it will be no, and I'll tell you reasons why that applies to me anyway. When I was writing The Black Widow for Marvel, I was also trying to get a novel finished at the same time, and I thought that the cross-fertilization would be good for me. Well, actually, it wasn't. And what I found was that if I'd put in some time on one of the Black Widow scripts, then at some level I'd convinced myself I didn't need to be writing the book, which something my editor disagreed with. So there was that. And also there was a point at which I started writing two books at the same time, and those books subsequently became Black Man and The Still Remains. And the reason really was because I talked to my editor and I wasn't quite sure. I'd just got the deal for three science fiction books plus three fantasy novels, and we didn't really know which was going to happen first. And so I said, "Oh, well, I know. I'll go away and write them both and see how we go." And all I really did was waste about 6 months because I kind of messed about, and neither of them was really advancing very much. And as soon as I decided, it was brilliant because I thought, right, look at this, I'm going to write the science fiction novel now. Okay, I put the fantasy to one side. Brilliant. Immediately I start to have all these fantastic ideas for the fantasy novel. So I think, maybe. Okay, so I go to the fantasy novel and I do about a chapter and a half, and boom, I start having fantastic ideas for the science fiction novel. And at that point, that's when I'm not going to play this game. Truly terrifying. I just, in the end, I shelved the fantasy because I had more of Black Man than I did of The Still Remains. And just got on with it. So for me, at least, it doesn't refresh. It doesn't help. It just gets in the way. Now, I'm pretty male in my genetic wiring. I'm not good at multitasking of any sort. And I think it's that whole tunnel focus thing. If, on the other hand, you are someone who's quite good at putting things in different compartments in your head, I have one friend who's a consultant. He's brilliant at it. He can think about three or four different projects at the same time. He'll say, right, I'm going to give 2 hours to this now, and then have a break, a coffee, and then I'll come back and I'll give a couple of hours to this as well. He actually is good at it. He does it very well. If you're someone like that, then yeah, sure.
It varies. I find having another thing to work on occasionally is certainly better than not writing at all for that time. But I don't miss deadlines. And I don't do unpaid work in preference to paid work. And as long as I can stick to those rules, I will occasionally interrupt a novel to write a short story if I feel writing a short story is more urgent. But I'm also used to interrupting novels to write reviews or whatever that will pay faster, if not better. Sometimes need the money sooner rather than more of it. And I've also found that this only works when you switch to novel to short story, or novel to review, or novel to writing a game. The idea of trying to write two novels at once, I've tried it. No, I would not recommend it. Some small cross-fertilization of ideas, but still, bad idea. Yep.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, novels are just too, it's too big to try and carry two of them in your head at the same time. No.
One thing I want to ask is entry level. Read small biographies, short biographies and books particularly and stuff like that, or any description of an author, and half the time, 99% of the time for good authors, you seem to see the lines, picked up this massive novel when I was 8, lived in libraries from then on, did this degree and started writing at Clara age. And that seems to be the way. You don't tend to read. I went off and did my, I sort of whatever. Did this, didn't go to uni. Didn't really read until this point or whatever. And you know, hey, I became a writer.
Andrew Levy.
Hmm?
Andrew Levy. very fine writer, half Jamaican, half British woman, who won, I think, won the Booker for a book called Small Island, which is about Britain in the Second World War and the period immediately following it. She published her first novel when she was about 36, 37, and she pretty much wrote it the year before it got published. She lived a full life into her early 30s before it even occurred to her that she should write a novel.
Should
I be that before? No, I don't think so. I think she thought Jack Walker had a variety of different jobs here and there. But it just wasn't on the scope for her. So she, I agree with you, the profile you're talking about is most writers do seem to have been in love with books from a very early age, and they write because they read.
And Paul also was always in time to grace.
No. In Australia, there is a strong correlation, probably because of all the jobs that a writer can do and get occasional time off in which to write. Teaching is a pretty good one, but it's not universal by any means. It's certainly not anywhere near as true in America among the writers there. And I've not had my time in Britain.
Chuck Bellinger.
Yeah.
Fight Club guy again, took piss the first 28 years of his life away, doing not very much, drinking a lot.
Hmm.
Then just thought, oh, super hard to write a book. In fact, he went on a writing program for some reason. I can't remember why someone suggested he should maybe go on a writing program. And then he sat down and decided he'd write something, and it turned out to be Fight Club.
Sylvie Junior couldn't even write. Whereas I don't think
that generally people come to SF late, that's the thing.
Yeah.
Generally speaking, SF and fantasy is generally something you discover pretty early in your life. But most people become fans of it early on. It's a different, you know.
Yeah.
And people may then later leave the genre and go off and do something else, either literary or in terms of just leaving something interested in it. But it's rare you get people coming into it at the age of 30 or 40 going, hey, what is this science fiction? I've heard of that.
Are there any other
do's
or don'ts that are specific to sci-fi?
Plenty. There was a magazine, Matt, make this the last question, we're over time already. A magazine a few years ago, which was famous for its tick and flick rejection letters. It had four of them, and some writers were trying to collect all four. because they were enormously amusing and helpful to conflicts. And the one line that I remember from these was, you watch a lot of Star Trek, don't you? And this refers, I suspect what this refers to, because I never spoke to the editors, was planets should not be all built on the one sound stage. Not all aliens are between 5 and 7 feet tall and have funny noses or funny ears. They don't interbreed. They don't all speak English. Have some understanding of science. Know which rules you're breaking if you're going to break them. Keep them if you can keep them. But by all means, study some of the science. And so don't make mistakes so obvious. That somebody's going to throw the book across the room. Don't make them remember they're reading a book. Make them think they're there. And this is going to depend on who your readers are. Obviously, comic readers are much more tolerant of scientific mistakes than
because the thing
about
comic medium,
Greg Egan readers.
The visual medium is so much more impactful.
Yeah,
that you can be put into the scene and you've got a much higher tolerance for Billy Christmas, just because it is. Whereas prose has to work harder to pull you in, and therefore you get much less leeway.
But you can still be ludicrous if you're consistent, internally consistent with your rules. Jasper Forward being a really good example. A Jasper Forward novel, I have less trouble suspending disbelief reading that than I do Clive Cussler. So, but yeah, there are plenty of specific, and read good books on writing science fiction specifically, as well as good books on writing generally. And I'll send you most of these things. Okay, thank you very much.